Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordic podcast. We're bringing together the best technical leaders from across the Nordics to discuss industry passions, challenges, and ideas. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and I help businesses thrive by connecting with top data freelance talent. And today, I'm your host. Thank you to everybody for joining us today. We're of course going to be discussing building a data culture, and joining me on this podcast, I've got Christopher, Fussy, I've got Archana, and I've got George. So before we go ahead and jump into the questions, if everybody go around the table and we'd like to introduce themselves, that'd be great. So if Christopher, if you'd like to go first, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Christopher. I'm a product manager at Volvo Cars, within the commercial digital part of the company. So I have a data engineering team building and facilitating like a data foundation within the commercial part of Volvo. So helping the product teams to make their data properly available for analytical use cases. So I guess my perspective here is sort of how a traditional manufacturing company builds a data culture.
Great. Thank you very much, Christopher, for that introduction. Fussy, if you'd like to go next, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, of course. Hello, everyone. My name is Fussy, and I'm head of data and analytics at the Nordic Field Group. We are a Nordic group with three strong e-commerce brands, all founded by entrepreneurs at different stages, especially when like e-commerce and online sales were in the early stages of those around 20 years ago. Later, they were acquired by the same private equity firm and then merged into one group under Nordic Field as the flagship brand. So yeah, we are present all over the Nordics and ranked among top three e-tailers in Nordics in market share. I'm working there and building the data stack for them, basically starting from the scratch, like getting data in. So building it end-to-end, starting from the data engineering bits and pieces, getting the data in and into a data warehouse, transforming it, cleaning it, and then preparing it for the end-user analytics. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you very much for that introduction. If Archana, if you'd like to go next, that'd be great.
Hi, I'm Archana Satyanarayana. I work as a senior engineering manager at Truecaller, where I head the central data infrastructure team, which is responsible for building the data platform for the whole company.
Nice. Thank you very much for that introduction. And George, last but certainly not least, if you'd like to introduce yourself, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Yes, my name is Jörg von Septitz-Lieberstein, and I'm heading up the data analytics function at the electric vehicle development at Scania. So me and my team, we are supporting the different organizations within the electric vehicle development, supporting battery development and charging as examples. Currently, we're focusing on building data products to enable our engineers to get kind of the insights that they need in the best and the simplest possible way to make their lives and their decision making easier.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Great. Thank you very much for that introduction. And thanks, everybody, for joining us today. We'll jump straight into the first question then. So the first question was submitted by George. So what leaders' behaviours are essential for building a data-driven culture? So if you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then I'll let everybody jump in to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to me, building a data analytics culture along with basically inner culture is a lot about leadership. But especially when it comes to data, I think that leaders have to take a very important role here. But what really are kind of the behaviors that we want to see from the leaders within our organizations, really. And that's why I'm super curious to kind of hear your perspectives on this.
Yeah, I can start. I think you're just throwing out some ideas here. I think it's key to sort of take a full perspective into account. I think we've heard the term like data-driven and maybe data culture for a while, but and people nod them and sort of, oh, that sounds great. But sort of how do we then take those perspectives, like, okay, how do we consume data? I mean, you know, data-driven as using data in your daily work as a way of taking decisions and so on, but that's actually consuming data. How could we not end up in a situation where, okay, we consume data, but we consume poor data or the data not being available? So basically how data is being produced and made available. I think as a leader, you need to take both those perspectives into account and balance expectations. I think that is has been, at least since sort of the drawbacks, if you don't have that, that's like a pitfall. So as a leader, to sort of embrace the full journey, okay, it takes two to tango, both production and consumption perspectives, to make it really sustainable and not only like a one-time, one use case, data-driven POC, if you will. Just some thoughts there.
Yeah, you go, Fash.
Just to add to that, I think it's very important for leaders to also keep an eye out if you are creating any silos, because it's very common, another one of those pitfalls where often we see situations where there are silos created when it comes to data analytics. People are just used to doing things one way or another, just having that broader picture of your organization, where you want to go, where you are, and what are the steps you need to get there. And how can you as a leader empower employees and everyone else in the organization to be data-driven and be more focused towards, all right, this is where I want to go. This is how I can be data-driven in my daily work, and just start there and like present yourself as a data champion, be the advocate for data. And yes, with all the standards that Christopher talked about, it should be thought through, like from the production side of things till the consumption side of things. So how do you actually start? How do you actually avoid creating those silos? How do you actually empower people to come together, foster that data community within your organization, and provide them the platforms to actually feel safe when sharing things about data? Because more often than not, people might be doing things wrong, but that shouldn't stop them from testing things out, because that's the only way that they will start trusting the process, trusting the data, and eventually follow you as a leader. I have a data champion. They are advocating, they are empowering us. Let's just do it.
Yeah, and I really agree with you that, you know, they have such an important role in kind of taking the first step, right? To show the rest of the organization that, you know, data is actually needed in their decision making. Because I feel that we often forget, we talk about data driven, but we really maybe not talk so much about what comes after. And to me, it's a lot about data driven decision making, right? That's what it's all about. And decision making, well, as a leader, yeah, sure, we're not taking all decisions, of course, but we have the responsibility to make sure that all our employees have the best prerequisites possible to take the decisions that they need to take in kind of their line of work. So that's why I kind of think it's super important that we actually focus on also formalizing maybe our decision-making process to make sure that we have a certain way to make decisions, that we always expect there to be data on the table. And if leaders start to expect that, then I think others will follow as well. Others will kind of expect that in their decision-making also. And then we can kind of get that wheel going. And I think, as you both said as well, that, well, we need the right prerequisites, of course. And we can't just focus on the consumption part of data as well. We need to kind of have that full perspective. And then, of course, we need to make sure that our organizations are set up for that, that we have the needed competences, that we have the right teams, of course, to embrace not only consumption, but also production of insights and data, and that we can also operate that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that being a role model is one of the behaviors of a leader, that by putting it out, people will follow you. So, for example, even in the operational decisions that you're making, you yourself as a leader can show the data and then show that this is why I'm making this decision, because, yeah, the data says so, rather than just feeling like, okay, we do this because this is not going well, but rather show the data, give an example so others also see that. And I also agree that expecting others also to bring the data into the table. So in every decision making, you expect that even everybody else is supposed to behave that way. That's a good one.
I think one perspective to this is, I don't know if you recognize it, but I've seen it in the past year, sort of the leaders or sort of executive management. So they expect data. I mean, not always, but in many cases, they expect data and they also get data. So they get data that they believe is the right data, and they take decisions on that. But sort of, okay, what's sort of the black box that the data has sort of come from? That might be something where, okay, it takes too much time. It's done by people who might not know the data. They just get the data because they have a commitment to management to provide data. But how could we make some kind of viability and reusability in the data? We know that, okay, the data is actually from the source to top management, that we get some kind of lineage between there, and we know that the data is right. I've seen that, okay, that tends to be disconnected sometimes, and also costs a lot in terms of, you know, an analyst spending weeks, day and night, to get that data together. Have you have any similar experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that are really driving kind of our data product efforts that we are doing, to make sure that these analysis or collection of data that is being done is not only ad hoc, right, and doing kind of one by one case, but really making sure that we step by step really build up this proper foundation of data, and in our case we're thinking it as data products. So for example, we are doing this, and we're doing this together with the organizations. We're not sitting here as a data team and building all the data products in one place, because I think that won't scale, because these different subdomains within the development of electrified vehicles, they're quite complex. And I'm sure that that's the case within any domain, I guess. So what we're doing is that we make sure that a data engineer from my team, you know, sits out in the, for example, the charging development organization, together with the kind of the software team that develops the actual data that comes from the vehicle. And we build the data product there, because then we create this kind of end-to-end responsibility where the same team that actually creates the data on board the vehicle also takes responsibility to serve it to the rest of the organization, assuring quality when the data is up in the cloud. So we don't have that disconnect. So that's kind of how we are addressing that, to create that, you know, evolving but steady foundation to stand on in terms of insights. And this is insights about our customers' charging behavior then.
It also depends on the data maturity of a company, where they are. Like in my current company, most of the product team can do this analysis by themselves, because we have this self-service reporting in place. So you don't have to wait for the data analyst to get something. They can run queries and they can use the reports to make these kind of reports for the management team. So I think that's kind of has to be the end goal, where everybody is able to do that. So you don't depend too much on the data analyst to do it. And most of the product people should be able to do that. But not every company is in that maturity level. So depending on where everyone is, you kind of make a plan to change that.
But I agree with, I agree with you, George, on how you are thinking about the data product. And that's how we did it at Voy as well, where analysts were sitting really close to the product teams and were part of the development process as well, where the engineers were thinking about the data even before they were starting to build out the features, which I think helped us quite a bit, because then you consider data as a product and not as a byproduct of the services that you are building. Mm. And once you start there, just thinking about it as a product, all right, it's important. I need to track it. And you have some KPIs defined already, like, all right, we are implementing this feature. What could be the KPIs? Mm. And how can we track them? And once you start with that mindset, I think it just starts transforming the organization and just they're thinking about data from the grassroots levels, because it's a tiny change. Yeah, you need a lot of investments, because then every team would expect analysts to be sitting closer to them. But the end results are amazing. So you see people trusting data a lot more. You see the data that is being produced, it's a much, much, much better quality than if an analyst was not involved right from the beginning. So I think depending on what the scale of your company, that's an important step, which is missing in some of the organizations. And one thing that I would like to add is, like, as leaders, we should also think about, we are empowering people, but when they are doing something, it's very important to celebrate their success, all the success stories that they have. That's, I think, one of the biggest motivation that people have. Like, if they are building something, if they're producing something on their own, and they might not even have a data analyst or a technical background, just celebrating their success, it's super important, and that empowers them to do even more, to get one step ahead, try to understand the data, try to basically trust that black box that Christopher mentioned about. That's what this is all about. Like, how can we make business understand that black box and just trust that black box, that, all right, what's coming out of it? It's trustworthy. It's what the actual numbers would be. That's the source of truth.
I think connecting that to leadership skills that would be required. I mean, that's a lot about bringing people together and also storytelling. In contrast to, you know, only basically there is the businesses requesting data from IT. That might be the case a few years ago. How could we rather see data as like a common interface where actually the business processes and the digital infrastructure is actually sort of meet. And transparency, I think what you mentioned there is key.
Yeah, and to me, it's also that kind of data, being data-driven isn't something kind of on the side. It's super connected in terms of how we work in general, right? And it also kind of builds upon the other kind of cultural aspects that we have. Because in the end, it doesn't really matter how fancy data warehouses we have or how nice dashboards there are, if we don't have the kind of the way of working or the culture that kind of requires us to use them. And to us, that means a lot for kind of different development teams to kind of adopt this really hypothesis testing, assumption testing way of thinking. And of course, we have that being kind of a product development company. But really taking that a further step now that we have these possibilities that kind of insights directly from customer vehicles provides to us, that development teams start thinking that the most exciting time, that's when the product comes out in customer hands, not when we finish the development project, because then we can start to learn. We can see if kind of the assumptions of which customer we thought would buy the product actually bought it or specified it with our components in it, if it performs in the way, or if we can even kind of find deviations or troubles before the customer noticed, right? So it fits very well into this more iterative, hypothesis-driven way of working in terms of product development as well.
Nice, some really good points there throughout that first question. We'll move on now swiftly to Archana's question, which is what actions can be taken to address resistance to change whilst implementing a data culture initiative? So if Archana, if you'd like to give a bit of background and I'll let everybody discuss.
So in our company currently, we have analysts, data scientists, everyone sitting in the business, and each of them own their data products. So we've started an initiative where we want the data quality of this product to be owned more by the business. So, which is why there's a data as a product strategy where there are these data products that each of the business units are building. And if they are sharing it within the business units, then they have to maintain a certain quality, have an SLA, and you know, all those stuffs that's required when you take a product into place. And for this is a new initiative that's being started in few months, and there are some resistance. So I'm like curious to know if have you guys faced any resistance when you bring a new initiative into table, and what is it that you guys think needs to be done?
Well, no resistance has been experienced. No, just kidding. I guess that is common, of course. All the things we do there, I guess that change is part of the journey. But is it more quality, sort of what is the resistance boiling down into? Is that they don't want to sort of ship in, or is it they don't believe in it, or is it more of expectations or whatever?
Yeah, they believe in it. It's not that they don't, but you know, it's more of an extra thing that has to be done. Mm-hmm. And yes, some of them are on board, but some of them are like, why do we need it? Isn't it already going well? Et cetera, et cetera. But it can be just general. Like if you bring something new into table, when you face resistance, what is it that we should be doing?
I mean, I think, if you go general, I think to shorten some kind of time to impact, I think that is key. A lot of things connected to data is something that, you know, people keep talking about and promise, okay, it's going to happen. But then if you talk about business people and maybe also in product teams, I mean, tendency that, okay, they lose faith in it because the transformation takes too much time before you can see any benefits. Mm-hmm. So if you only would sort of put that extra workload on them and then they don't see sort of the immediate impact, I think that's a good way of increasing resistance. But I mean, if you, the other way around, if you can say, okay, we can support, I mean, or you can do this and you can sort of small effort, but mm-hmm. at least maybe minor impact, but still some kind of impact. Maybe that would also create some kind of faith in what you do, and sort of sell the change.
Yeah,
so having milestones. Yeah, go ahead.
No, but I really agree with what you said here, Christopher. And one thing that I've experienced is that you need to have your success stories. You need to show some examples in order to kind of aid your communication in this, because I guess communication is everything in terms of change. What I've experienced is success stories from kind of within your own organizations are so much more powerful than kind of bringing examples from other companies. Okay, you know, this company did this, they got this benefit, now we're going to do it, instead of kind of focusing on a smaller part within your own organization, really putting the focus there and making sure you get that impact that you talked about, Christopher. And then you can share it to the other teams or to the other organizations that look what we've done within this organization. They experienced this impact, and because that's so much closer to them, right? So then you can kind of spark that idea. Okay, if they could do, if my colleagues over there could do it, then that's easier to relate to kind of what it means to me. That's something that I've experienced at least.
Yeah, I think it's often that we expect people to embrace the change, but we are not ready ourselves to embrace their resistance coming from there. So yeah, that's very important, because with any change, resistance, there is. And I have a very good example from my time at Voy, where we were kind of putting the ownership of everything that is more source-oriented towards the engineers and the product teams. And we expect them to not actively monitor, but at least whenever the alarm goes off, they should go in and check, because they are people who are sitting close to the source systems from which the data is coming from. Yeah, in between, you of course need tooling and everything to empower them, to actually help them through the journey. But how we approach it, we made it very, I don't know, bite-sized, maybe. So it was rolled out in phases. So first was just sharing our very broad plan with them without any implementation. So just a strategic thinking of what we are thinking, what will this help us achieve, and gathering their feedbacks. And how we did it, we approached every team and made those sessions very tailored to them, highlighting the problems that we have seen within their data sets, highlighting how it could have been solved if an analyst was not involved, if those alerts were directly routed to their teams, what could have been saved from the overall time that we spent on that incident, how much we could have saved only by sending it to them directly, and things like that. I think those examples really helped build that trust. And then based on their feedback, of course, when it's extra work, people are hesitant to take it, especially if you are working in leaner teams. But really building from there, that how can we best support them till they have the capacity or they can seamlessly integrate that in their dailies. So that was very important. So it was a gradual process, and it was developed with their feedback. So we were also open to their feedback and tweaking how we were going to roll it out, because in the end, if you roll something out which they're not really accepting, then it won't bring you as much value. It won't be living for that long if they are not going to use it, if they're not going to actively work the way you want them to work. So, yep, I think targeted trainings, focusing on benefits, and really building that trust with very transparent communication, that was very important, and that really helped us push that initiative forward. So, yeah.
That's a very good one. I really like that you went to small teams and then communicated rather than just taking it over with everyone else. So that's really great.
I think it was with one team, maybe we were already at phase two, while with others, we were just kicking off phase one. So the learnings, which could be transferred across those teams, we transferred them. And it was a learning process for us as well, because we didn't know how every part within the organization would react to this. So like Chiar said, like, success stories from within your organization sell much better.
Yeah.
And we were basically choosing those success stories because we were, with one thing, we were way ahead. And then we were using them as an example that, all right, they are doing it, and these are the benefits that we have. And then your SLAs are much better. Overall response time is much better. People would focus on their tasks and then think of it as, again, yeah, data not as a byproduct, but as their own product.
Mm-hmm. That's some very good points.
Have we also seen a big difference in if the resistance is in the teams that are producing this data, the teams that are delivering these data products? What we have seen is if these teams start using their own product, right, or if they start to become dependent and really get leverage on the data that they start creating, well, then they're kind of interest and also the energy that they put down into in making this will be a lot more. Because if we look traditionally at what we have done at Scania, data have been much of a side product when it comes from the vehicle. We have had software teams, of course, that are delivering or developing functions to the driver or to control the vehicle in different kinds of ways. And data has been in there in the mix for a long time, but it's been more kind of on request, right? But what we see now, when we kind of start to change this, that we have teams that are taking this end-to-end responsibility all the way from writing the software on the different nodes inside the vehicle to actually serving this to the end user, but also using it themselves, right? then it sparks in a totally different way than the teams that have only been producing software and just thought about, you know, how it, yeah, this data is required, you know, we're creating it, but we're shipping it to someone else. Someone else takes care of it. And the difference has been, it's you know, it's significant. So if you also, those teams that are creating those data, if you can get them to start using it themselves to drive their own kind of processes or their own business, well, I think that's a success factor in itself.
Nice. Some really good points there, Pharrell. I'll move on now to the next question, which is Christopher's question. So how to increase data literacy across the company and who is responsible for making it happen? So if Christopher, you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then I'll let everybody discuss.
Yeah, I think this ties very well into what you just said, George, about engaging the teams and so on. So, but I will come to that. But the background is basically, I mean, Volvo Cars, well, like a commercial strategy. I know maybe you heard of it in I don't know, in the news or something, but it's quite clear we go direct to consumers, not only selling vehicles, but going direct to consumers, understanding their behavior, providing like a personalized experience in the processes, in sort of buying a car, but also in the digital products. I mean, in the ecosystem. So that's one very clear thing. And this is obviously sort of requiring data, I mean, about the customers and so on. But then we also have the data strategy, which is very clear. I think it resonates quite well with what you said about a decentralized approach where we have the teams taking more responsibility for sort of for their data, but also, I mean, doing more on their own. Not only waiting for one central center of excellence team to ship in, but rather that we expect more from the teams out there and have where the domain knowledge sits. So I think those two strategies, like the commercial strategy and the data strategy, both of them, they are very sort of people buy in and think, okay, this is great. But it actually raises the bar of competency. I mean, if we put more pressure or more expectations from the team, both when it comes to like data engineering and how to make that available, but also to actually build products that consume data, that are personalizing the offerings and so on. I see like a broad trend that, okay, if we should deliver on this, I mean, long-term, then data competence needs to be, and data literacy needs to really be incorporated into every product team. There is no such thing as I don't know data. I mean, you need to work with data in a different way than before. So just throwing out there, how are you sort of, do you see the same type of trend there? Same type of expectations? Is it something that is sort of putting those strategies at risk because maybe, okay, it's great, but we can't deliver? Or sort of how to support the strategy by also supporting the data literacy?
I can say that we definitely see this as well, right? Maybe being a bit of a different situation, being in an organization with almost like 700 engineers plus, we see that these people, yeah, they're pretty capable, right? And a lot of them are already doing data analysis in different ways and have been doing for a long time. But of course, it's not exactly what we see ahead. So kind of the main gaps that we see in terms of is maybe how you work with data analytics, going from maybe a quite ad hoc, I would say, R&D traditional way of working, where everyone writes their own MATLAB scripts or Python scripts and work with data in files, to really start kind of consuming these data products in the data platform and becoming more and more kind of structured in their approach to be able to kind of share their results, but also go from this ad hoc to a more structured way of working when it comes to data. And currently we have kind of two different perspectives that we're driving. So one is kind of education. So we have created this quite simple e-learning to get people started, covering a few different perspectives that you need to know, from kind of privacy to all the way, how do I get into the data platform and just get querying and then start doing something that you know, shows you how to start working. So that's kind of one part. And that is something that we kind of continuously develop now. And the other part is kind of a bit more on the kind of on the governance side when it comes to specifically building data products. Because then we said that, well, and where we are right now, one priority is to kind of make sure that we don't bring this ad hoc way of working into the cloud. We want to get people there, but we want to adopt maybe a new way of working with kind of data products and so on. So then we said that, okay, for building data products that others should consume, well, then you need to have a data engineer in your team, basically, because those data engineers, they can then collectively meet together and, you know, share, develop a common way of working on how to deliver and develop and operate data products that they then can bring out into the different teams, into the different domains then, so with the batteries or charging or whatever, right? But where we are right now, we see that, okay, developing this way of working and establishing it, that's a priority. So let's not just let it completely loose. Let's make sure that we have some people that can really champion this. So that's kind of the approaches that we have chosen, you know, that and then the educational part.
I just like to add something about the education part. I think even before targeting the users, the employees, first, I would probably go and see where are they at, because there can be somebody who is in the middle of it. Somebody can not even know anything about analytics or things like that. Because if we are considering World War, I mean, you might have various kinds of people who are tech savvy and not so tech savvy and things like that. So maybe some kind of a survey where you assess rather than where everyone is at, and target them, the courses based on that, and have a data literacy program. I remember watching some presentation, I think it was an insurance company, and they kind of targeted different kinds of people based on where they are at. So that way, everybody gets their own tailored program and they will be able to understand data more. And also one of the things would be to have a business glossary, because when I say revenue of a product, what does that mean for me as a technical person and me as a product person? It would be different, because in my previous company, the way you would calculate turnover for a sports book was totally different than how you would calculate a turnover for a casino product, for example. So if business and the technical people are also on the same term, so when business is talking some term, technical people also understand, each of them are in the same path. Otherwise, one says something, the other understands something. So that also kind of has some resistance to being understanding data there. So yeah, those two things, I guess. And of course, if you have a buy-in from your leaders, they should also promote it. That would also help.
Mm. I think, and we have, I mean, the teams out there and the people are really sort of eager at World Course. I mean, there's fantastic people with a mindset that this, you know, okay, how could I learn this new tools? And I mean, they're quite savvy, data savvy, but there's also what I think what you pointed out, George, about, okay, but what is the Volvo way of doing it? How do we do here? I mean, it's maybe people can do it, but they do it differently. How could we as some kind of central team also provide the guidance that is clear enough, because then it's probably easy to do it right if we put it out there. And we also, okay, we can support, I mean, in one way or the other, it could be educational programs, could be also ad hoc support, but to not end up in a scattered world where you can do it this way, you can do it that way, but try to say this is how we do it, and then probably people can upskill, and it can be easy to leverage the competence that actually is there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Arshana's points as well, where she mentioned like just do a temperature check of where people are and tailoring those courses. And I talked about the initiative where we moved analysts closer to the product teams. And as a result of that, a lot of people from different parts of the organization were just very curious about the data. And one solution to that was, for us, was, all right, what's the quickest way we can just give them the tools to look at this data themselves? And I conducted 4 lunch sessions over 4 weeks, just teaching them basic SQL. It's just like starting very, very basic, but this is our data. This is what select does. This is what where class does. Session number 2, these are aggregations. These are dimensions. These are some metrics. Session number 3, all right, how do you go one step further? How do you join different sources? Session number 4, how to get even more advanced. And suddenly after that, we saw that spike in the use of our self-service BI platforms. They were just like, they went up and then it sustained over there because people were actually using those lessons as their base to get in the data. And we had a very good response from the management and also the middle management, really promoting that across their teams to and asking people, depending on which parts of the organization they are in, again, you should take the first 2, you should take the first 3. Only 1 is enough for maybe if you're very non-technical, if you just want to basically. And then similar was done for all the tools, all the BI tools that we had. Similar was done for Google Sheets, even that how to do stuff over there when it comes to pulling out some data. You need some very quick charts, which you cannot do in some of the tools. This is how you can do it. And in the end, that became a data academy at Voi, where that was kind of, whenever we onboard a new person, based on their role, you should take this course during your onboarding process. So that gives them, all right, I'm in this organization, I know the data, and this is exactly what I need to know. This is whatever I'm learning with my data. And that helped along with, we had business glossaries, we had very good documentation across our data sets. We had a very clear metric catalog. Everything was very clearly mentioned. This is how we measure revenue. This is how we measure our rights. This person is the owner. If you have questions about this, this person has implemented it. So everything was very clear, and that really helped us foster that data-driven culture over there. That then we went one step further and assigned data champions across different regions. So if someone in the UK has a very specific question related to the UK, they would have a data champion within the UK. They could just go to that person, and that person would know, all right, which data sets are the relevant data sets for their problem. So I think it was a lot of investment in training and upskilling the organizations, but we also had a very good response from management. The people were willing to take that step and upskill themselves, which, we saw a lot of value coming out of that.
But I think you're saying something important here, and I think that's what you said also, Arshana, that we need to start considering this being part of the kind of the normal skill set you need to have in the organization, right? That given your role, given what you do, you're also supposed to know some things about using data in the line of your work. And I think kind of getting to that point, I think that's, as you said, that's really when it kicks off, right? When it starts to be seen as, well, it's part of the employees' onboarding. It's a kind of a normal part of the operation. Now you get to know a little bit about the business. You get to know a little bit about that. You get 1 or 2 data courses in there to make sure you know how to get going with the getting the insights you need. I think that's where the real magic happens.
Thanks, really good input. And I think like what you just said, to build on that, I mean, like the business analyst skill set, okay, might sort of grow a bit more into also an analytics engineering type of skill set. And maybe the software engineer skill set is also growing into more of the data engineering. You need to have like some basic data engineering skills as a software engineer to be able to, I mean, to as a product team to actually, I mean, to own the pipelines of how you create those data products. I personally think that is within reach. And I don't think we need to, you know, to hire new people just to fill that gap. I think we can grow, but we have a responsibility there to make it easy, understandable, not to use those buzzwords. And what you just said there, put those courses and glossaries and catalog out there.
Actually, a couple of our business units already backend engineers do data engineering work in our company. So it's something they're already kind of doing.
Yeah, well, we'll move on now to the last question then. So this last question is from Fassi. So your question is, does a modern tech stack or infrastructure impact the data culture? So if you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yeah, of course. I think if you just think about it, this question more broadly, it's more on the lines of whether your technical infrastructure can be a hindrance in adoption of your data strategy or your data culture that you're trying to build. In my opinion, that is the case, but that comes with a side note that it's the people who are actually making or breaking it. Because we have seen organizations where they might have the sexiest data stack out there, but still their consumers, they feel overwhelmed when interacting with that data stack. So they cannot really get themselves to be truly data-driven, even if they want to. So, yeah, in my opinion, there needs to be a balance. But yeah, I would love to hear what everyone else has to say.
Being in a team, which is data infrastructure team, I think it's two ways, I would say. It's either, first thing, in an ideal world, you would build a data infrastructure based on your data strategy, which is then aligned to your business strategy. That has to be the ideal one. But no, not everybody would be there. But having a good data infrastructure can play a role in having a good data culture, but it's not always the case. Like if you have a self-serving reporting in place, that means you're enabling even the product team to be able to do things on their own. Then having a good data catalog system in place, which will help people to discover. The discovery of the data would be easier. Having ownership, proper ownership, then people know whom to reach out because this is a table somebody else owns and I want to use it. So making these kind of facilities easier, like having those things in a good data platform, it will do help in having a good data culture. But in the end, it also boils down to if people want to use it, as you said, if there is a great stack, but people don't have the mindset to use it, then it'll not be of good use. So it can play a role, but then it's also people in the end.
Yeah, and before we move on to Christopher and George, just to add another note to it, if we think about the organizations who do not have any modern data infrastructure, who do not have a self-service BI, who might have systems from, I don't know, early 2010s, how should they think about it if they are listening in? Yeah, they want to be more data-driven. That's what I was thinking when I was drafting this question as well.
So in my previous company, it was not this modern part. We were still in Oracle. But then the reporting tools that we choose kind of helped. So there was there was a part that we wanted to go to cloud, and then there was Click. So at least some things can be done. But yes, there were a lot of ad hocs that was coming in, and people were overwhelmed. I'm not saying having a modern data stack is the answer, but having at least a good reporting tool that can provide the self-serve you don't need. Like back 10, 15 years back when I was working in Oracle, we were having OPIE, which was like, you know, you could do self-serving. That was the vision of my head of, and then there were business users who were using it. You could just pull the dimensions, create your own reports by yourself. And that was what, 10, 15 years back. And you don't actually need a modern data stack to do that. It just helps because of the scalability, the way business wants to grow, everything is fast. So the on-prem situation cannot help. But to make it more self-serve, you can still use the reporting tools to make it happen.
I think one of the first questions we discussed here about leadership skills and we talked about motivation and so on. I think, again, I mean, not saying that, hey, we will deliver a modern data stack and just wait until we have that in place and then we can be data-driven. I think that there's that risk of sort of expectations, and we sort of over-engineer perhaps, and perhaps sort of believe too much in that silver bullet, that we actually lose pace, lose faith in what we do, and that the data teams becomes somebody you don't want to collaborate because they are only just saying that, oh, wait until we have the tool in place. So I think that culture wise, I think we can still work on the culture regardless, and try to be as tool agnostic as possible. But of course, we need those fundamental capabilities to make it easy for, I mean, to work with data quality. We talk about ownership. Okay, what does that mean? That, I mean, it's easier if we have the tooling in place so we can be practical, right? But I think that's probably a generic pitfall for all organizations going through the transformation, that you know, it takes so much time because it's too complex to change. But that we, in the meantime, we need to have some kind of response to still move in the right direction. We can't pause and then wait for implementation and then we act. Not sure you follow. I'm a bit unstructured in my thinking here, but maybe you recognize yourself.
Yeah. And to me, it's a lot about kind of effort and simplicity, right? I think what you said previously, you can do it with whatever data stack you have, right? But it might require a lot of effort. And getting that tooling that out to different people and different teams, yeah, might be challenging. And I think kind of the primary thing that, you know, we are on AWS and Snowflake, that kind of cloud has provided to us as a small team is that we can get started very, very quick, and we can do it very, very in a very simple way, in the first kind of iteration, because we don't have to think about how to manage servers or how to whatever, because that is abstracted away from us. We can let someone else do that for us. So I think what a modern data stack and maybe cloud in general provides us with is the ability to focus more and more of our efforts on kind of value creation instead of managing platforms and infrastructure. And also when we're scaling this, you know, just stuff like infrastructure as code, you know, it makes it so much easier to share knowledge and way of working with another team and say, oh, we created this data product in this way. This is the kind of the Snowflake infrastructure that we spun up in order to kind of look in this Git repo and you have everything and you can just clone it and get started. Then having to, you know, start at the infrastructure, maybe you have to click somewhere in some tool to get stuff up and running. But you know, I think that's where it kicks off for me, at least.
I think coming back to Volvo Cars and the journey that we're on, I think that maybe is applicable for you as well in Scania, for instance. Okay, how do we merge the legacy landscape with this the modern tech stack? How could we sort of find a way forward here? Where okay, we might not have the same prerequisites as a sort of a digital or tech native company or data native company in that sense, but still, I mean, the industry is full of companies with the common challenge. Okay, how do we merge this with reality? And there, I think we need to. I think there will probably be some kind of calibration. Okay, how do we take on those challenges if you have a mix of legacy systems where you don't have Kafka topics to ingest the data into Snowflake, but you need to find your ways around. And how do we work with ownership? How do we work with governance in general in such a setup? That's probably something that we will talk a lot about.
Yeah, for sure, because there won't be just one way or maybe a simple solution to everything. But then having a more flexible infrastructure or having the entire AWS toolbox to your disposal, that helps you being flexible and also helps you to integrate to whatever other legacy systems that you have. So I think being flexible and being able to start really, really small kind of gives you an edge in that.
Yeah, I think especially in these cases, things should be thought through. But if whatever we are thinking about, XYZ tool, it would make sense in the long run, and if it will yield the value, and if the learning curve is not as steep, to just scare people off.
Cass, I'd like to say thank you so much to all of our guests for sharing their thoughts in today's conversation. If you are hiring for a new technical role or looking for new roles, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and you can find me on LinkedIn or email me at charlotte.roberts@evolution-nordics.com. Or visit us at evolutionjobs.com/SE. Thanks again to all our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.